This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast about the themes driving markets and the economy now and in the future. I'm your host, David Brett. And on today's show,
we discuss the net zero carbon future businesses face, the amount of emissions just one seemingly low carbon emitting company can produce.
That's equivalent to roughly the annual emissions from an average Kenyan city of around 70,000 people. So it gives you an idea of the scale of that, and that's obviously your global emissions.
The effect on investments and returns if we don't tackle carbon emissions.
What our analysis shows is that almost half of global listed companies would face a rise or fall of more than 20% in earnings if carbon prices rise to $100 a tonne.
And the investment opportunity it presents.
Estimates suggest that as much as $5 to $7 trillion a year will need to go into industries, technologies, and activities that provide the solutions to lead to that transformational change that we need.
The COVID-19 crisis in 2020 triggered the largest annual drop in global energy-related carbon dioxide emissions since the Second World War. That's according to the International Energy Agency, the IEA. It said global carbon dioxide emissions fell by about 6% in the last year. But that's where the good news ends. The 6% reduction in CO2 emissions is still way less than the 7.6% needed every year for the next decade to prevent the average temperature rising by more than 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, one of the targets set in the 2016 Paris Climate Agreement. That's according to calculations by the United Nations. And overall, despite the pandemic-induced lockdowns, carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere are still at record levels. The latest data from the IEA show that global emissions were 2% or 60 million tonnes higher in December 2020 than they were in the same month a year earlier. The consequences are real.
Biodiversity is collapsing. 1 million species are at risk of extinction. Ecosystems are disappearing before our eyes. Deserts are spreading. Wetlands are being lost. Every year we lose 10 million hectares of forest. Oceans are overfished and choking with plastic waste. The carbon dioxide they absorb is acidifying the seas. Coral reefs are bleached and dying. Air and water pollution are killing 9 million people annually, more than six times the current toll of the pandemic. There is no vaccine for the planet. Nature needs a bailout.
Last year was by a narrow margin the hottest ever on record, according to NASA, with the climate crisis stamping its mark on 2020 through soaring temperatures.
Well, brace yourselves, because the UK could have the hottest ever day today.
It's been the enormous hurricanes.
And Delta would be the fourth of five named storms to hit Louisiana, part of a record hurricane season in the Atlantic that blew away estimates.
And unprecedented wildfires.
Now, next, we turn to these shocking wildfires on the US West Coast. We know at least seven people have died and tens of thousands of people have had to evacuate. And we're seeing some terrifying and extraordinary images.
Which is why we need to take action. Reducing the amount of CO2 we're putting into the atmosphere and increasing the capacity of natural sinks, such as plants and soil, to absorb CO2 by 2050 is imperative. So the race is on to net zero.
By early next year, countries representing more than 65% of global carbon dioxide emissions and more than 70% of the world economy will have made ambitious commitments to carbon neutrality.
We all need to play our part. And it's not just about countries and governments. Companies and investors need to do the same. But how do we go about reaching net zero? And how will the costs of achieving net zero affect businesses and those that invest in them? Today we're joined by Hannah Simons, Head of Sustainability Strategy at Schroders, and Vicky Lay, a Sector Manager in Finance and Investment at Climate Care, which works with businesses, including Schroders, to help them achieve a net zero future. We'll discuss how companies are implementing change to achieve net zero and how that will affect investments now and in the future. But in the first part of the show, we'll discuss the role investors will play in reducing emissions.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
So, Hannah, if we can start with you, and there'll be a lot of people listening to this thinking, what role does an asset manager or investors play in climate change? Can you just take us through what in particular they have to do with climate change?
At a quick glance, I think you could, you're right that we might look like we actually don't have very much to do this, because if we look at our scope one and scope two carbon emissions compared to other sectors, the asset management industry is looking pretty good. But it's when we take into account our scope three emissions, and in particular, those that relate to our underlying investments. And it's here you see quite a different picture.
Vicky, can you just take us through what the difference is between scope one, two, and three emissions?
Absolutely, no problem. So scope one and two are broadly energy consumption. So scope one is the use of burned energy on site and by an entity. So for example, gas or oil potentially on a site, but also fuel used by business owned cars. Scope two, which is the, normally the largest contributing to most sort of corporates, is the electricity consumption to your sites. And then scope three is pretty much everything else. And there's 15 categories under scope three that range from investments, which is obviously particularly relevant in this discussion, through to company business cars, business travel, etc. Supply chains, which is more relevant in things like food and beverage industry, etc.
Okay, so Hannah, where do most of the asset managers' emissions come from?
So as I mentioned earlier, it's when you actually look through to those scope three emissions that the majority of our emissions are. In fact, if you look at just scope one and scope two, the asset management industry is one of the lowest emitting industries. But by adding in those scope three emissions, and in particular, the emissions coming through from our underlying investments, we go to one of the highest, in fact, estimates suggest in the top three sectors for overall emissions.
Vicky, we hear a lot about carbon emissions. We heard in the introduction its effects on the environment. But in the race to reduce emissions, we also hear a lot about carbon neutral and net zero. Can you just briefly explain what they mean and the difference between the two?
Absolutely. And it really is a hugely complex area, and not least because it's evolving at such a rate as well. And these terms are not owned by anyone. So it's really about understanding what's considered best practice for the two particular terms that you've referenced there. So carbon or climate neutrality, which are largely interchangeable, basically means that you have measured and verified your footprint, your emissions, but importantly, not to any particular scope, which is what we talked about slightly earlier. So that could include your scope one and two and an element of your scope three, but it doesn't necessarily have to include all of them. You just have to be clear on what you've included. And then secondly, that you've compensated for those emissions through offsetting. Net zero is quite different. Net zero is where you have achieved reducing your emissions, both in one scope one and two, but also importantly in scope three, down to as close to as zero as possible. And that is why when you hear about net zero commitments, ordinarily they will be for 2040, 2050, or even 2060, for example, with the Chinese government. And those targets are set to take account of the fact fact that lots of technological development will be needed in order to decarbonize many sectors and electrify different processes, etc. Others, it's a lot easier to transition if the technology is already there. Once an entity achieves net zero, or indeed globally we achieve net zero, so that's what the Paris Agreement is all about, is achieving net zero globally by 2050, which is what we need to achieve if we're going to avoid catastrophic climate change. And once you've reached net zero, that remaining emissions, which we call residual emissions, and there will always be an element of that, because it's, you know, unlikely to be possible to get it down to completely zero in a lot of situations. Those remaining emissions need to be removed from the atmosphere through different projects or entities, like tree planting is the sort of classic one that people think of. But there's lots of innovation around technical removal of carbon from the atmosphere, peatland, and all sorts of different opportunities for doing that in the future.
Hannah, given the complex nature of their businesses, how can asset managers achieve net zero?
Well, I think there are two key ways that we can do this. Firstly, of course, we have the option to invest in companies and securities that have already aligned themselves to being net zero. The second option is actually through our engagement activities that we can encourage the companies in which we invest to adopt such a change. And it's really this second part that is critical, as a growing number of companies make their own net zero statements and targets. So through being an engaged and active owner, this second part is truly an important piece of the responsibilities that we have to create value for our clients. And earlier this year, as part of that and as an example, we wrote to the leaders of the FTSE 350 in the UK, asking them for their plans around net zero in the future.
What's been the response so far?
I think so far, David, I would say it's been a fantastic response. Already in a matter of the first few weeks, over 40 companies have responded in writing to us. And nearly half of those have already provided their very detailed climate transition plans that we were asking for. The other thing that's happened is that we've also had direct engagements already, and a couple of companies have identified the actions that they've been taking. So, for example, one company said that this is something they've been considering for quite a while internally, but had never actually made the step to sort of formally commit and make that public information. So we can see that this is already having a very positive impact.
Okay, and can you share a typical example of how asset managers might support a company towards achieving net zero?
There are a number of ways that we can really help a company. And the first thing is to really understand where they are on their journey. So a critical part is really helping company management understand the financial implications of its net zero commitments. Also helping understand the risk that's inherent in the plans that they're setting. Because some of these plans, remember, might extend over a 30-year time horizon. And critically, we ask a lot of questions around how that net zero commitment might impact not only its own workforce, but also its broader stakeholders. So, for example, its customers, and also its relationship with regulators. And at Schroders, we've actually built a whole suite of tools to help us understand the potential investment impacts from climate change. And a great example of this is our carbon value at risk model, or carbon VAR as we call it. And what this model is trying to do is assess the extent to which company profits, and therefore the returns that investors may see, could be at risk from tougher climate policies. And in particular, what we're isolating here is the impact of an introduction of higher carbon prices. And a carbon price is the cost, if you like, that's applied to pollution to encourage companies and organisations to reduce the amount of emissions that they emit. What our analysis shows is that almost half of global listed companies would face a rise or fall of more than 20% in earnings if carbon prices rise to $100 a tonne. Now, that $100 a tonne is a lot higher than where carbon pricing is today, but it is reflective of where we think carbon pricing will need to go in order to be consistent with the long-term target set by the Paris Agreement. So we use this information. The purpose behind that tool is to really help our investors here at Schroders understand the magnitude of the risk that a company faces from higher carbon prices. And we also use the output of our tools to facilitate the engagements that we have with companies to really put to them the questions about their plans to manage and mitigate these types of risks. And a critical action that we took was in December last year when we became a founding member of the Net Zero Asset Managers Initiative. And at launch, there were 30 managers that joined this initiative. And just in the last few weeks, an additional 43 new investors have signed up to the initiative. And at the heart of this initiative is essentially the commitment to work in collaboration with our clients to achieve emissions reduction targets and reach net zero by 2050 or sooner across our investments, and obviously in line with global efforts to limit that temperature warming to 1.5 degrees. So that's been a critical initiative in addition to the Net Zero Asset Managers initiative, but also recognising the important role that Schroders, both from a corporate and an investment perspective, plays in managing that transition to a lower reliance on carbon. We've also recently committed to introduce a science-based target, not only for the business, but as I say, importantly, across the investments that we manage on behalf of our clients.
So we've learned about the complex nature of emissions and the role investors play. In part two, we're going to talk more specifically about how companies are implementing net zero plans.
Get in touch with us by email at schroderspodcasts@schroders.com or visit our website, schroders.com/investor download.
So Vicky, can you tell us a little bit more about what Climate Care does?
It would probably help if I give you a little bit of an overview about offsetting first and foremost. So offsetting is a mechanism whereby an organisation or an individual can compensate for their emissions through supporting initiatives, projects around the world that are avoiding and removing emissions from the atmosphere today. So we do that in two ways. So we work with corporates all around the world and governments to develop programs that fit within their wider sustainability or climate strategies, for example, on net zero, and allow them to compensate and support these projects. And on the other side, we work closely with the projects themselves to help develop them and get the funding and help them through the verification, which is very extensive, in order to receive this carbon finance. And carbon offsetting is all managed through credits, and one ton of emissions equates to one credit. So, for example, if you had a footprint of 10,000 tons, you'd then invest in 10,000 credits in order to compensate for that. And Climate Care have been really foundational in developing the voluntary carbon market since Kyoto Protocol over the last 20 years. And we're a founding member of ACROA and are really proud to have really advocated for quality and integrity in our sector. And we continue to do that as part of the Mark Carney Task Force for Scaling the Voluntary Carbon Market. And as our role as the number one B Corp in the UK, and various other awards that we're very proud to have received.
And how do you work specifically with Schroders?
So we began working with Schroders about in 2020, and are very proud to have been part of your first offset and subsequent offsets. And to do that, we've compensated for your scope 1 and 2 and also business travel as well, which amounts to 18,000 tonnes a year. And just for a bit of context, that's equivalent to roughly the annual emissions from an average Kenyan city of around 70,000 people. So it gives you an idea of the scale of that. And that's obviously your global emissions. And you've supported 3 really fantastic projects, 2 rainforest protection projects that work closely with communities, one in Sierra Leone and one in Brazil in the Amazon. And also a really fantastic community tree planting project as well that works with small groups and landowners to plant trees and manage them through to growth. And that's in Uganda and Kenya.
There's a lot of speculation that companies greenwash. So that's when businesses invest more time and money on marketing their products or brand as green, rather than doing the hard work to ensure that it's sustainable. How does Climate Care ensure a company isn't greenwashing?
That's a really good point, and it's a really important part of how we work with our clients, is making sure that not only what they do is really robust, but how they talk about it. And that's primarily about real transparency, being completely open about what you've done and acknowledging that it's very much a journey, and it very much is for most of the people we work with. You know, there's a lot of ambition, but it will take time, a lot of this. We need to do everything we can. Carbon offsetting is a really important part of climate strategy. We need to halve global emissions by 2030, and that's the equivalent to reducing completely removing the emissions from the US, China, India, and Europe. So it's a significant ambition or target that we need to meet for 2030 if we're going to hit our net zero global requirement for 2050, which is what we need to do under the Paris Agreement if we're going to avoid catastrophic climate change. So we need to measure emissions, we need to reduce our emissions, and we need to offset them. And this three-pronged approach is what's advocated by thought leaders in this space, such as WWF and the UN, and the Science Based Targets Initiative as well. So absolutely needs to be part of the strategy, but it's not as isolated. It's not an isolated activity. It needs to be part of a robust strategy. And that's really important in avoiding greenwashing.
Time is such a crucial factor in all of this. Many of us find it hard to contemplate that a lot of the initiatives we might not see the benefit from for another 3 or 4 decades. Apologies for being moribund, but a lot of us might not be around by that point. How do you have the conversation with businesses and investors about why something that could happen so far in the future is so important right now?
David, you're really getting to the heart of all of the challenges that we face. I think the first thing I would stress is that Schroders is a very long-term investor. Many of our clients are investing over that very long time frame. But what I would highlight is it's the changes that we start today that will protect the long-term future of all of those companies and their investments over that longer time frame. So although we expect these transition plans to happen over an extended time frame, there's always a good time now to start making those plans and putting those plans into action, albeit that some of that action might take a while.
Morals of investors and businesses undoubtedly play a role in the actions they take when it comes to climate change. But investors want to see returns now, and many can't wait decades. So in the final part of the show, we're going to look at whether investors and businesses can afford to have morals. As we've discussed, all these initiatives come at an immediate cost with no guarantee of long-term success. So Hannah, can investors and asset managers afford to have morals?
It is true that over the last few years at Schroders, we have added resources across our sustainable investment team, and that's included the build out of some of those tools that I mentioned earlier to really help us understand the impact of sustainability. But the reason that we've been doing that, the reason that we've been making those substantial investments is because we truly believe that there is more to investing today than simply really understanding historic risk and return. We think you need to take into account a third dimension, and that dimension is impact. So the impact that our investments will have on people and the planet. And therefore, those investments that we have been making to us make entirely good sense, because actually we really need to be able to identify those leading companies in the future. We must be able to take into account and understand the risks that they face as a result of sustainability. The world faces unprecedented challenges today, and we've obviously put the spotlight on climate as one of those critical pressures that we face. But if we look more broadly at environmental and societal risks, I think we can turn to the 17 United Nations Sustainable Development Goals as that sort of blueprint for a more sustainable future. Now, tackling those challenges will require a huge reallocation of capital. Estimates suggest that as much as $5 to $7 trillion a year will need to go into industries, technologies, and activities that provide the solutions to lead to that transformational change that we need. That means that huge shift of capital that we will see from sort of some dirty industries to cleaner will have the opportunity to provide significant returns. So putting it another way, any tension that you might see between sustainable investing or a more sustainable future, so perhaps putting those morals first and delivering returns, which is obviously the thing that we're seeking to achieve, I think for our clients is really falling away very quickly. In fact, I would actually go as far to say that increasingly, in order for us to actually protect and both create value for our clients, we have to understand those sustainability risks and considerations across that social and environmental spectrum in order to maximise the returns that we can deliver for our clients whilst taking into account those sustainability challenges.
And do clients and individual investors understand that?
I think they increasingly do, yes. Perhaps I can share some evidence of that. So every year, Schroders asks both our retail and our institutional clients about their investment preferences, and that includes sustainability preferences. And what you've seen over the past few years is a growing interest from our clients, and more of them saying that as they look out in the future, they expect sustainability to be taken into account in the investment decision-making process.
Okay, so it's clearly demand from both clients and investors themselves. But Vicky, just on a more grander scale, what do businesses and individuals need to do?
Well, really, it goes back to that sort of three-pronged strategy. The first is awareness, understanding what your impact is and measuring that. Even as an individual, there's plenty of calculators on the Climate Care website and plenty of others available to measure your carbon footprint. And then reducing it in a number of different ways. You can do that firstly by changing and reducing the amount of energy you're using. So, for example, simple things like walking and cycling to work, really straightforward, less travel, reducing your energy consumption, turning off light switches. They all add up cumulatively, both in businesses and as an individual. But then importantly, selecting the products and suppliers that you use in order to make sure that when you are purchasing, using services and products, that they are as sustainable as possible. So everything from switching to renewable energy, as has already been touched on here, to looking at, alternative types of sort of food supplies. For example, that a quarter of all global emissions come from food production, which is 13.25 billion tons of carbon every year. So reducing, meat intake, things like that can make a real difference. Both in terms of types of products, but also importantly, selecting those companies which are doing the most in this space is really important, because consumer demand for products and services that are sustainable will ultimately drive those businesses to thrive in this transitioning market. So with pressure from investors above and pressure from consumer demand below, that's where we'll see transformative change in the economy in exactly the way that we need it to happen. So there's plenty you can do. And of course, whether you're a business and whether you're an individual, whilst you're going on this journey, compensate for what you're doing along the way and deliver both, climate impacts, but also other sustainable outcomes as well along the way too.
Here's what else investors are talking about. 2020 was an extraordinary year for climate change action. Public opinion, governments, businesses, and financial markets all had major shifts in their appreciation of the urgent need to address the climate crisis. More investment, research, and development, and international collaboration will now come together to enable a faster transition to a net zero economy. You can read portfolio manager Simon Weber's article, Why the Going is About to Get Tougher for Investing in Climate Change, at schroders.com/insights, where you can also find out much, much more. Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch with us about anything on the show or give us ideas for future shows, you can email us at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. If you want to listen to the Investor Downloads back catalogue, and why wouldn't you? You can go to schroders.com/the Investor Download or rate, review and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. New shows are available every Thursday and every other Monday from 5 p.m. UK time. But above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.